Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, episode number, I don't even know, what do we think, 40 odd, maybe, 30, 40, 30-ish, 35, I don't know,
36.
But welcome.
I was going to say, when was the last time we did episode numbers?
God, when I think it got to about 15, and I was like, I literally don't know anymore. But welcome to the Russian Grand Prix podcast. I'm Matt.
I'm Tommy.
And I'm Jess.
And we are here to talk about the ongoings from the Sochi Autodrome and, well, what can we say about the Russian Grand Prix? There was controversy, there was team orders, there was not a huge amount of wheel-to-wheel action, but reasonably entertaining in some aspects, would you say?
Another strategy race. Another race saved by strategy, I'd say.
Saved by strategy, yeah. Not my saved by Mercedes review. Going on to mediums, basically.
What is going on with your laptop?
Oh, it's wigging out.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know what you've done. It's probably when Verstappen doesn't win, you just throw your laptop or something. Yeah. Right? Some three-word race reviews from fans. We've got survival.henzani says, Seb, it's James. SquirrelBoy1704, bring back V12s. We've got a Tommy stat in brackets. So, Tommy, do you want to hit us with the statistic? A statisticians, as Lando says.
Yeah, a
statisticians. Data.
Yeah, Sebastian Vettel probably won't enjoy this one, but I looked back at the reliability of V12s and looked back at the era when Ferrari had a V12 engine. Obviously, this isn't all engine failures, but predominantly engine failures from their retirement. So in the hybrid era, there's been 116 races and Ferrari have retired from 25 of them. And Ferrari's V12 era between 89 and 95, there was 113 races. And guess how many races one car retired from? 83.
Wow.
Out of 113
races.
So
he doesn't want to bring back the V12
era. Don't bring back the V12s because you will never finish a race.
So I thought that was quite a strange, because he's never raced a V12, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, why are you saying V12s? If he had said V10s, I'd have been like, well, yeah.
Yeah, I understand it, but don't know.
Maybe not that he raced them either, but V8s.
Oh, yeah, V8s, obviously.
Yeah.
He just loves the old schoolness.
Yeah, interesting. Well, so yeah, he just kind of opened up and was like, I like a V12. It was absolutely no correlation. We've got Mixu_Tapani says Seb can't hear, and Ramprats says virtual safety car.
Ooh.
So Nimble14674152 came in with one of the most important questions that we put out WTF1 podcast. You know, we say from fans, you know, what kind of questions you want to ask, and Nimble asked, should you put tomato sauce in the fridge or the cupboard?
Fridge. I'm a fridge guy.
Surely,
yeah.
Cupboard until it's open, yeah. And then you keep it refrigerated.
Yeah. Oh wow, okay. We can all agree.
Wow, this is the first time we've agreed. It's about tomato sauce. Now, the actual question was to do with Ramprat's virtual safety car three-word race review, where Josh Poulter 04 came in with a question: is pitting under the virtual safety car an unfair advantage to those who are able or choose to? I know they talked about it on the coverage, but would love to hear more opinions on it.
So obviously, this is in relation to the fact that the race was basically flipped on its head after Vettel retired, and then the VSC came out and Mercedes were essentially granted a free pit stop.
Yeah. So I think at normal race pace, it's 24 seconds, wasn't it? Or something like that?
Yeah, they said it was about 15
and 15
seconds,
under the virtual safety car. So that's a 9-second advantage, which Lewis very much and Valtteri both took advantage of. And that, as you say, flipped the race on its head. Lewis took the lead. And with it being Sochi Autodrome, there's not really much chance of any sort of change of the lead.
I love how this has come out now. The virtual safety car has been around for quite a long time, but only now it's sort of shafted a guy out of a race win, and probably the fact that it's led to a Mercedes 1-2, suddenly people are now like, well, this isn't fair.
No, there was this Australia last year when Seb overtook Lewis in the pits under a VSC, and then there was the whole, like, there's been
there have been moments
where a VSC has completely changed the outcome of a race. But
I've never seen so many questions, because this was quite a popular reply saying, like, the virtual safety car isn't fair. And in the commentary as well, Paul D'Arresta, when Hamilton came out of the pits, Paul D'Arresta was very sort of, this isn't right, it's meant to neutralise the race, this isn't fair, which...
Well, should we go right, like, I guess, let's take it back to basics. What is the VSC there to do?
Neutralise the race.
Right.
Which...
Without the need to bring out a full...
But it never can.
Well, it couldn't, especially when it first came out, because people were kind of taking advantage of it in some areas. There was that talk of taking different racing lines and you'd be able to gain time on your opponent, as opposed to if you were taking the racing line. And it's very odd, but as you say, it's supposed to neutralize the race, and it hasn't really come up that much in terms of criticism for it. Obviously, as you say, there was the Vettel thing last year at Australia, but we haven't really seen many and many occasions where the VSC has changed the lead of the race. But I imagine it's changed a lot in terms of the midfield, which we don't see as much. And maybe that's why, because it's then at the forefront of everyone's minds, okay, is the VSC fair? I don't know.
I heard people talk about maybe that pit doesn't, if you pit under VSC, it doesn't count as your mandatory pit.
Mm.
And that would then be, you know, if you want to get a tyre advantage, maybe later on in the lane. Right, I guess it all depends on when
they could close the pit lane. I think that was Paul D'Arresta's argument, that if they closed the pit lane, you can't stop.
You can't get an advantage. And
when they used to close the pit lane, there was the problem that if you had fuel, you needed fuel, you had to pit. But that's obviously not a problem anymore.
But what if, like, you know, what if one of the reasons that the VSC is brought out is because there's been a collision, a car is needing to get cleared out or whatever, but it's not serious enough for a safety car. But there's another car that's got damage, and it's then dangerous for that car to not come in the pit lane.
I think there should be the option to pit, but then you get a penalty for it. Like, that's if that car has, as you say, dangerous damage, then they can come into the pits. But
I
don't agree. I think it's a variable in Formula One. You know, everyone wants it to be fair, obviously, but things happen. It's like saying, oh, we'll cancel the race if it rains because the guy winning deserved to win when it was dry. It's stuff
happens. But that's a different kind of condition. Like, a VSC going out is the decision of the stewards or whatever, you know,
but it's like a safety car, right? If the safety car often changes the race result,
exactly.
The virtual safety car changes the race result. It's just unfortunate. Obviously, it's unfortunate that Ferrari have lost the race in that way, and it's screwed them, but next time it might screw Mercedes, next time it might screw
Red. But I think the difference between VSC and safety car is that safety car, okay, some people gain, some people lose, but at least the pack is bunched up. Lewis, until we had the actual full safety car, would have had a 6-7-8 second lead on soft tyres, and that would have been it. He would have romped away, and he obviously still did win the race. So I can understand both arguments, because it does kind of, it's almost like a cheap way of the race just flipping on its head, whereas at least with the safety car there is action straight afterwards. I don't know, but
I'm sure
a lot of people will.
I think I agree with Tommy. I just think it's just a part of, again, that's kind of why I was like, let's get back to basics. Like, what is it there to do? What it's there to do fundamentally is to slow the cars down to protect them from something that's going on track, or protect the marshals from something that's going on track. What it does to the actual racing, I think there have been enough instances of where a VSC hasn't affected the race over when a VSC has affected a race for it to just be a moot point. Like, it's just something that you have to, like, strategy-wise, you have to take it into account. That is not an inevitability, obviously, because it's not, but it's just an eventuality that you have to have a strategy in place for, because it's something that could happen.
Stuff happens in F1 races. It's a plan on, you know, you go into Monaco and the disadvantage is if you pit early, you're on a straight track.
Yeah.
And same with Singapore. You know, you pit early, you're vulnerable, because if there is an incident, it's going to bring out a safety car. So, you know, it's unfortunate for Ferrari, but there was always going to be that risk that was going to happen. So it's just...
Yeah, and we actually saw the VSC, which was unlike Singapore when we had George Russell walking around and there was no VSC. So yeah. There's inconsistencies with when the VSC is actually brought out.
That apparently, according to racefans.net, Ferrari were 100 metres away from avoiding a VSC for Vettel's retirement. So with where...
A VSC zone.
Yeah, where Vettel had parked the car. If he'd have done it 100... Hang on, let me just double check what it says here because I don't want to misquote. 100 metres maybe later, we could have got to the pit lane, essentially is what he's saying. But because they had to stop the car, because otherwise it was going to cause massive electrical problems.
Which I'm surprised they still didn't do, if I'm honest, because I'm surprised they didn't just go, okay, all right, Vettel might take an engine or whatever in the next race.
Was it endangering Vettel because of...
Yeah.
I think that's the question.
Oh, there's a loss of insulation to the car. So essentially the driver is not protected against...
I can see it there in the quote that it says, yeah, it's the safest action we could do for Seb,
yeah,
which, okay, is fair enough, right, because fair. Yeah, yeah. If they'd carried on, and obviously the argument is, it doesn't matter if the car falls to pieces, yeah, but if, yeah, it's endangering Vettel, then it makes sense.
Because it's that electrical side of things which can cause issues.
So, okay. I mean, that's racing, right?
Yeah.
It's fractions and, you know, 0.001 of a second can change everything. That's just racing, so...
I just want to clarify for my VSC opinion that it's not because Leclerc was obviously the victim in this, because I didn't agree with it in the Vettel one either, really, when in Australia 2018. So, but hey ho, that's just part of racing, as you guys say. So Jess, let's go on to your three word race review.
Sure. So I've put Ferrari to themselves.
Interesting.
So obviously, as everybody knows, there was a huge case of team order chaos, essentially, and Seb, even after the race, seemed to keep refuting the fact that they'd had this discussion about who would lead the race after the start because of the toe advantage that the third place position gets. I just think they over manufactured it. They made it too complicated.
100%.
They just.
Why didn't they do it in the pit stops?
Yeah, it was. Which they did do it,
but they didn't have to. By not doing it in the pit stops, they've now created this thing where Charles feels like Vettel's not going to obey the team orders, so he won't now want to obey team orders. Vettel has already pointed his authority that he's not going to obey team orders to help Leclerc. Mm. Whereas if they'd just done it in the pit stops, they could have done that without this whole political back and forth on the radio.
Because that's created
this massive...
They still gave Charles the preferential strategy.
They hung Seb out to dry.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it didn't matter that he was first into turn two.
It didn't make any sense. It's almost like they hadn't spoken to their drivers about, okay, if Seb gets into first, into turn two, then we will do this. It was, okay, yeah, well, what's going to happen now?
Now you've got to swap back.
Early in a race as well,
just let them race.
It made no sense for them to swap so early anyway, because Hamilton was on more durable tyres as well as sticking with them. If Seb and Charles had changed positions 6-7 laps into the race when they were arguing, Hamilton would have then had DRS on Vettel because of the 2-second gap that he had to Charles, and it just made no sense.
The only way it would have made sense is if Charles was really quick and Vettel
behind
was
him. Yeah.
Going slower, and then they could have swapped. Vettel would have backed up Hamilton and given Leclerc a gap.
Mm.
But instead, you know, Vettel was the one checking out. The thing with the toe is, clearly before the race, and this is something that Charles said himself, they said, whatever you do, make sure you toe Vettel and not Hamilton, because we want a 1-2 into the first corner, not Hamilton taking the lead and us second and third, which is totally fair. The thing is, There doesn't seem to have been any discussion that goes, well, what if Vettel attacks Leclerc?
Yeah.
If there'd been a discussion and said, well, if Vettel passes you, we'll swap it back later, that doesn't seem... I've seen no clear-cut decision whether that was the case.
No.
I think it was. I think that was they had been said it would happen, but not how.
Right.
Because obviously then Charles is going to panic and be like, oh, well, Seb's ahead. I'm not right behind him. I'm losing time. It's hard to follow around Russia. And as the commentators were saying, this is Seb's time to prove himself now and make the gap. And he got to like 4 second gap and he looked like the quicker Ferrari. And I imagine maybe some of that was down to Charles feeling a little bit hard done by, probably not driving the best and getting a bit aggressive and frustrated.
Or
in the
he
car.
Just thought, I'm going to manage my tyres and I'll go and for longer if necessary. I don't know.
And like, I wonder how much he, when he was pushing behind Vettel at the start, because they'd told Leclerc Vettel's going to let you through. He was obviously probably picking up the pace and getting in the dirty air, and maybe that's when, you know, some of his tyre performance had gone off as well.
The most embarrassing thing was that everything was broadcast and no one seemed to know what was going on. No one. And
I mean, great watch, great entertainment for everyone listening
and,
to it.
You know, I think the two drivers actually got a bit of a hard time on social. I know everyone's very quick to judge, but, you know, they're calling Charles a crybaby. I don't think that's correct. He was actually quite mature about it. I mean, even though he
that
made
meme
it,
you showed me was brilliant.
I'll find it.
Yeah, you find that later.
But yeah, so he made it very clear. Like, look, guys, I followed the rules here. Like, I did what we agreed, and now you've put me behind. Mm. But equally, it's slightly immature to think that just because there's been an agreement, like, we know what like they're races at the end of the day. And they're going to put themselves first unless it's a completely and utterly pointless and thankless task. And then they'll do a Bottas.
Yeah, like Leclerc. Yeah. Yeah. Savage, but true. Leclerc, obviously, though, in Bahrain, Leclerc was told, don't overtake him yet. And he overtook him straight away. They've both shown this kind of, well, I'm going to take my own. And it's almost like a preview for 2020 where Mercedes have got this perfect wingman in Bottas where he will happily move out the way. He won't beat Hamilton. But if these two, even if Ferrari have an amazing car like they have now, that relationship is going to be spicy and could cost them a driver's title if they're going to be tripping over each other like that all the time and they're losing races because of it.
Yeah. Nicholas BJKR1 says, is the internal rivalry in Ferrari beneficial? Two great drivers pushing to outpace each other, or detrimental? Team strategies become almost impossible to the team. There's, of course, ups and downs with it, but is it overall an up or down?
I think it's good, though. It's got up. Pros and cons, right? Yeah. I think it pushes both drivers to be their absolute best. In the case of Lewis and Valtteri, they do push each other. But like, Valtteri's very quick in qualifying. He hasn't done so well recently. But I think that's been, and here I am jumping to Bottas's defence, but there have been a couple of things that have happened that haven't gone his way and meant that he hasn't qualified very well. But we know that he's quick and he does push Lewis in that respect, I think. And that's good, but not to the extent that Charles is pushing Seb. Mm. Like, Seb has had to absolutely bring his everything now.
If this is happening now, though, what's it going to be like if they get to that first race and the Ferrari is miles quicker? It's the thing that Mercedes had that advantage at the very start of the hybrid era where they had Rosberg and Hamilton and they tripped over each other a lot and they were taking points off each other. But ultimately, they had no one to challenge.
Yeah.
If Ferrari had been there that year, they might have, you know, snuck in the championship. It's kind of what happened with Kimi when it was Hamilton and Alonso at McLaren having that inter-team battle. Ferrari, if those two are tripping each other and Hamilton's just taking points all the time, finishing the best Mercedes, it's going to get very bitter. And it's getting very bitter already. I can feel that relationship is ready to explode already.
I don't know if it's on the brink right now. I think personally it's good for Ferrari, and I think that the two of them have really brought Ferrari to where they are now, especially Vettel with the development over the last few years and whatnot, although he didn't really have much of a competition with Kimi back then. No. But then I think that moving forward, Ferrari aren't scared to implement team orders. We've seen that, and Leclerc is happy to play the team game when it's been agreed, and that's when he then comes back and goes, well, what's happened here? You know, like, he's been told, say for in Singapore, you know, it's just a general team rule, we won't undercut with the car behind, and then he's questioning that. You've got this one where, you know, we've agreed, you know, so he, obviously it was to his benefit both times. So don't get me wrong. I don't know if he'd be complaining so much if Seb was getting the advantage. I don't know. But
he did come out at the end, Charles, and said everything went according to plan.
Yeah, but he's very
apart
PR
from
friendly,
his.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he is. But that's, I mean, again, that's a level of maturity that you need, I think, to be a Ferrari driver.
Go with the meme now.
Okay, so the meme is other drivers on the radio, and it's got a picture of Rambo yelling, and then Leclerc on the radio, and it's a picture of him doing a presentation, and it says top five reasons why you are wrong, and I should win the race. Yeah. Just because his team radio so during measured. That was just kind of like. I just want to let you know that I'm not too happy about this.
We'll speak after.
I just want to let you know.
We'll speak after the race. 2 laps later. I kind of want to speak about it now.
But it is interesting how this is something I wrote down, that the Leclerc, at the start of the year, Leclerc was almost untouchable in the social public eye, like you were saying, and a lot of people now are kind of jumping on this.
Lecry.
Yeah, like, oh, he's a princess, crybaby. He's a crybaby.
That's not
blah,
fair.
Blah, blah.
No.
Which isn't fair, but it does make me laugh how as soon as you get into a winning car, people will immediately criticise you.
I remember, love or hate.
Do you remember Vettel was this amazing personality that everyone loved, and then as soon as he started dominating in a Red Bull, I was like, oh, I hate Vettel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You've got the results of an Instagram poll though, haven't you, there?
Yes, so 75% of people said that Vettel shouldn't have let him through.
No, I mean... Just looking at the whole thing, I don't know why Ferrari implemented anything anyway.
No.
Like, Vettel is an absolute cannon of a Ferrari. He's starting on softs. Mercedes are starting on mediums. There is a very small likelihood that Hamilton's still going to be ahead going into turn two. I don't know what... I wish they hadn't, because it felt kind of cheap when we heard over the team radio that Vettel was going to let Leclerc through, and that's coming from me. I was kind of sat there like...
The most disappointing thing about him retiring is it would have been so interesting to see how that had panned out, because essentially they should have pitted Vettel straight after Leclerc, but that would have meant he'd have led. So they pretty much screwed Vettel and lost him about 5 or 6 seconds just so they could implement a team order. Yeah, it would have been really interesting to see, and it's pretty unfortunate that he retired.
Very unfortunate. Now, let's move on from the Ferrari debacle. Tommy?
Debacle.
Three-word race for you.
Is Albon 2020 seat. So I think that race for Albon, from me, has pretty much just confirmed that he's getting that seat, unless something absolutely catastrophic
Gasly
happens.
Gasly wins the next race.
Yeah.
He was lucky though, wasn't he? Because he had a shocking... I think he damaged the car in FP2, and then obviously had... the spin in Q1.
Yeah.
So he was on the back foot massively.
Yeah.
So he had everything. He had, and he always, whenever you hear him in interviews and stuff, he's so hard on himself. He really, he's so humble. So when he does well, he just kind of like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But when he does badly, oh my gosh,
his qualifying one was hard to watch, really.
I think we mentioned it in the last one that all the new drivers are like, I'm an idiot.
But he seems to be like even more so, I don't know, to an extent, but Jesus.
Yeah,
pit lane to such a, P5.
It was a great drive, and I don't think, personally, I don't think he's an absolutely leaps and bounds ahead of Gasly in terms of
pace
and everything. It's the moves that he's making, his racecraft. He's finished in the top six every race in his first four races. Gasly, I think, was about 8th, 11th, 6th and retired or something.
He just couldn't get through the field, could he?
He couldn't, yeah. I think it was Austria where he was stuck behind Kimi for ages.
Yeah. Like 20, 30
laps. Albon is just, he's not afraid of a dive bomb. He's just going in there when he can. And I'd argue now that regardless of how good Gasly does at Toro Rosso now, his Red Bull performance has already lost him that seat.
And that's the thing, Albon's only going to get better.
Yeah,
you know,
he's shown a lot more potential.
First season. Yeah. Gasly's had a few seasons now, and he's kind of shown to a degree what he's able to do, especially in the Red Bull. He had 11 races or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, Albon in his first four has definitely impressed more than Gasly has in every sense, really.
It's crazy to think Albon is a rookie.
Yeah.
I almost feel like he was at Toro Rosso last year, but he wasn't.
He's not.
He was
in F2, wasn't he?
Yeah. So
yeah.
But
he's only just.
Yeah. As well, he's... probably perfect for Red Bull in that he's not beating Max, or if Red Bull end up with a championship winning car,
he
has the potential to be a Bottas.
Yeah, which
better than
is
Bottas,
what you want in a team. If
yeah, exactly. You need not a better than number Leclerc, two driver.
You're in disagreement with that. Tobbs CS says, is Albon versus Gasly still up for debate? No,
I don't think so anymore.
Unfortunately, not. I'd like to see Gasly still perform at Toro Rosso because he can clearly still drive that car. But
then where?
Just stay there.
What, forever?
For a little bit until
forever.
He gets like a podium or something.
Become a Hulkenberg and just disappear eventually.
I don't know where else he'll go apart from down at the moment. So
unless he breaks out of his Red Bull contract and he can go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think he'll need a few seasons to be like, hey teams, okay, I'm a bit better now. But yeah, he's got talent and we've seen that. He got fourth in Bahrain and he's got the skills, but for some reason Red Bull is not the seat for him. Yep. My three-word race review is about the track. Worst third sector. Now again, I think I tweeted this and people were like, oh, it's only because Charles couldn't get through. Obviously, that was the prime thing that we saw on television. But just generally, the track is just so bad, especially when the only real overtaking spot is into turn two and maybe turn 13. But turn two, it's not even a hard braking zone. You've got six 90-degree corners in the third sector or whatever it is.
Woeful.
And with the state of the current F1 cars, even with the simplified front wings, you can't follow a car. So, you had Charles, who was clearly quicker than Bottas. But he would lose. You could see he got to about 3 or 4 tenths with that ridiculous straight line speed of the Ferrari, which still blows my mind away. But then he's 7 tenths probably behind going around the last corner.
Yeah.
And then he just gets to striking distance. But because, as we spoke off camera, Tommy, about just the nature of the braking zones, they don't promote overtakes.
Yeah, if you look at the track, the only two overtaking spots aren't even straights anyway. They've got a big curve in the middle. So is it turn 10? After turn 10, they go into turn 11, 12 and 13, which is that braking zone. It's quite a cool corner, and Albon's move was really... Albon's move was good. There was a really good move by Delatraz in F2. When you do overtake there, it's a spectacular move.
Yeah.
But it's difficult, and six 90-degree turns before the only overtaking spot of the track, and they wonder why you can't overtake there.
It's
absolutely ridiculous. Even the F2 race, which is renowned for being crazy, them overtaking each other every lap.
There was hardly anything, was there?
Six cars in a truly train for the whole race, and they just could not. They were separated by about 2 seconds.
Truly train for people that maybe are a bit younger. Jarno Trulli used to be a man great at qualifying, put himself up the grid, but then would just have the worst race pace ever, and everyone would be stuck behind him. So so it's a case of just not being able to pass. Hell Yeah Boy says, why does Sochi always fail to deliver good races? Obviously, we have the circuit layout. I think the fact it's a one-stop as well, quite easily a one-stop it was this time round, that doesn't help because you need that significant pace advantage to be able to make the moves.
It's such a bad circuit. It is so
it's
poor.
Up there with Valencia, isn't it?
That's a tilt drain that deserves its bad reputation, really, isn't it? I mean,
definitely.
Like, there are some good tilk drones and there are some awful ones, and this one's an awful one.
I think that's about as good of a race as we'll ever have in Russia.
Agreed. I think,
and it's all based on strategy
and all because Mercedes went on mediums. If they went on softs,
basically the race was exciting from because of Q2. That was pretty much it.
It's ridiculous.
It's just such a woeful track.
While we're mentioning the track layout, we obviously had that horrific crash in F2 on Sunday. That was massively panicking. One of the reasons there as well is because the runoff areas aren't really they're tarmac, so you can just drive over them at speed, and it caused a massive collision in F2. Magnussen got a penalty for using it incorrectly, which I don't know if it was. I actually quite agree with him. I don't know if it was fair that he got a penalty for
that. There's a lot of the time where you run off into that corner and then you can't go around the barrier anyway.
No,
but the.
I just had a message for the camera guys saying we're outside because I need to pause the recording.
All right.
I've gone to reply and I've just seen in the corner of my eye that Slack's just come up.
Okay.
All right, we'll stop. Yeah.
We'll pause
in.
It. Okay.
Now it's time for
you can
the
do
jingle.
It. You do it now. Go.
ABC you do ABCDF1 and I'll do like a little...
And now it's time for ABCDF1. That is the worst... That's the worst thing. Don't do that ever again, Tommy.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Let's go to ABCDF1. Let's start from the bottom. Williams. George Russell.
Oh, wow.
George Russell. Brakes went That was a shame. Bit weird. Hard to judge, as I think with every single rating we've ever given him ever, because he's never above 14th place. C.
C.
Yeah.
Robert Kubica, he had to retire with some strange... There was like some word like, oh, Williams has retired him for a strange reason and I can't say why. Did you see about that?
Yeah, and yeah. then...
To save the power unit or something, I heard.
And then he said that, I don't know why they retired me because the car was fine.
Yeah, and I think it sounded like from what people have reported that they were trying to just save for the next race because they were so far behind, which, I mean, they should have just done that for every race so far, right? Because, I mean, it's very
No,
odd.
Because I guess they wanted their perfect sheet, but that got ruined when George got
punted.
Bumped off
yeah, that was a very
last
odd
race.
One. Mm. Yeah. Toros... Sorry, wait, Kubica, what were we going to do? D.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just, yikes. Yeah, it's just sad. Torosso, Daniel Kvyat.
C.
He nearly got... absolutely wiped out by Gasly going for a worldy move into turn two.
Those two
where did Kvyat finish?
He finished 12th, started 19th.
Not great.
Not great. Not. I mean, it's not bad.
Toros had no pace.
No.
So to make up that C.
Give him a B if he'd have worn his helmet despite the
penalty. Yeah, despite the great penalties.
Yeah.
Pierre Gasly.
D.
D, yeah, he didn't drive very well. Did
no.
He? Nearly
poor,
wiped out his team.
Poor race. Slower than Kvyat, lost out in a lot of wheel-to-wheel battles.
Yeah, D, fair play.
Although he did get his elbows out with Albon, but obviously he still got overtaken.
Yeah. Yeah, his elbow was kind of out, but then...
He didn't, yeah.
It was like,
I just see around the elbow.
A little bit.
Just a tiny one.
A little poke to the ribs.
Yeah.
but
please
D.
Don't do that.
Oh, God, we laughed. We were told not to laugh.
Oh, God,
the peaks.
Yeah,
oh, well. Alfa Romeo, Kimi Raikkonen.
Oh, F. Awful.
Rubbish.
Shocking.
Terrible driver.
Bad.
Awful.
Stalled at the start. Screwed up his
awful
qualifying.
Drive. No, yeah, okay.
Screwed
oh,
up
yeah.
qualifying.
He jumped the start, didn't
jumped
he?
Jumped the start.
That was bad.
Also, if you're going to jump the start, do a Maldonado
and
in 2012.
Go.
Just go.
Take the lead into
it.
Turn two. Come on.
He stopped and was like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, he did, and then he was last off the grid.
Yeah, because then he was like trying to re-engage it, and yeah, that was a bit embarrassing. So we're going to give him an F.
I don't think he's ever done anything like that in his entire career, has he?
I feel like he's just on holiday now.
Well, yeah,
I don't think he's really in. He was really in the zone first half of the season, but I don't know. He seems to have tailed off a little bit. Antonio Giovinazzi, I want to give him a
B D.
What?
Ooh, hot.
He out-qualified his teammate.
Yeah, and didn't I.
Where did he finish?
He finished bottom.
He got involved in the Grosjean Ricciardo.
He got
Ricciardo
absolutely
sandwich.
Sandwiched there.
His
he
kind of racing
probably
incident.
Shouldn't have put his car there.
Yeah,
though.
But just stick it in there, you know, and then you know.
He could have just he could have done a Lando and just gone up the inside cheekily and then let those guys just.
He could have. He didn't.
It was a race.
You know, he didn't.
To be fair, at the time, fair, because when he actually goes for it, there is a gap, and then it's oh no.
Because
Ricciardo, I think, goes for it as well. Yeah. And it's unfair, I think, to blame him in that because he, you know, he
oh, no,
needed
I don't
to get
he's,
stuck
he's
in
not,
I don't think
he's
it's
not,
his fault.
It's not his fault.
I'd say it's hard to...
Give him a C.
It's hard to judge.
Give him a C.
I'm going to
go
C.
because he
qualified. Yeah, overruled.
Okay,
Racing Point, Sergio Perez.
A.
He had a good one, didn't he?
Yeah.
A. Where did he finish?
Borderline
he finished
A star, I think.
He finished seventh
in a pretty
Racing
poor
point.
Car. Let's
okay, we'll give him an A. We'll give him an A. Lance Stroll.
C.
Yeah, I didn't really do as well.
Okay,
he got damage on the first lap as well, didn't he? He got himself into a bit of a tangle.
McLaren, Carlos Sainz, A star.
A star.
I think
star.
A star. It's got to be an
A star.
Yeah.
Carlos Sainz, A star. Yeah.
We don't give those out very often.
No, I think what else could
rarity.
He what
oh,
else
no,
could he
actually,
have done?
Do you know what? He could have probably couldn't have finished fifth. He couldn't have got Albon.
Because he was eight laps to go when Albon caught him, so
yeah.
Maybe
and he,
fifth
to be fair,
an A star.
It was good thinking because I think in his post race interview, he was saying I would have defended, but we had a fast Sergio
Perez
coming up,
yeah.
And you know, there's no point battling Albon. I probably wouldn't have kept him behind, and I would have lost seventh.
To be fair, now I'm looking at the result. You've kind of got to give Sainz and Perez the same score.
So
they
so
both get
A
stars,
okay.
Or they're both getting an A.
Let's give them both A's.
A.
Okay.
Lando Norris, B.
Finished
eighth.
B.
Didn't he? Is that
yeah.
A? Yeah.
B,
you can't,
decent
you can't give,
drive.
Can't give him a C, can you? Is that what you're...
I was thinking
tinker?
About it.
Don't you dare. God, he wasn't that far off Carlos, was he? He got screwed over by the safety car a bit as well, I think.
Yeah, he did.
So,
let's give him a B.
Didn't
do Haas, Romain Grosjean.
Great
quality. Can't really grade him.
Yeah, I felt bad for him.
He had a really good qualifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't even He was around the outside in that incident, so...
Complete passenger.
Can we grade him?
I don't think
it's really
we
hard
can.
To grade.
But I feel like giving U's is a bad thing.
Yeah, because we've done
problem.
It before.
We've done
where
it,
we've
given
said
people
you
use.
Is just you.
Well, I
rubbish.
Guess the use just
drop just score. No, yes. Let's give him a B, just because of his qualifying performance.
His qualifying was great.
And then you can't fault him for that.
And he didn't have the rest of the race to make any mistakes. So
yeah, he was on a B when he got wiped out. Kevin Magnussen. I think he could have done better. But then he had a good race, but he could have done better in qualifying. I think he himself said that as
he
well,
was
he?
Fuming he, about his penalty. He said it was absolute bullshit.
And, well, if you watch it, there's no way he could have made it around that first bollard where you have to keep to the left.
He's been putting some funny
race reviews. Tommy, we don't have time for this. I'm sorry, mate.
Why?
We have 6 minutes.
Can we just talk about his post about sausage curbs? It's as stupid as it sounds. Had a great time, but then I got a sausage penalty.
And then he also talked about making it. He turned turn eight into a poo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
For Bantz, let's give him a B.
Let's give him a B.
B for tops.
Renault, person. Daniel Ricciardo.
Again, really D. hard to...
Difficult to... He didn't have a great qualifying, did he? Either?
Qualified 10th.
No. So D.
Behind Hulk.
Behind Hulk.
Quite a long way behind Hulk.
D. We have to be more decisive here. D for decisive. Nico Hülkenberg.
Had a good race, but then got a bit of a not so good race.
He did a two-stop, didn't he?
That's my official review. This is why I sit at this table.
That was about as insightful as AWS insights that we get during the race of like, 73% of chance of an overtake.
Who do you think's behind that?
Oh,
wow,
it's me. Just throw a percentage in. Okay.
C.
Okay. Red Bull, Max Verstappen. Decent drive. B. He kind of came from 9th to 4th.
Yeah, it's one of those. A few years ago, you'd give him an A for it, but you kind of expect him to go from last to fourth now.
Alex Albon,
A.
Not from the pit lane to fifth, get in the bin.
A,
because he crashed his car in qualifying.
I don't care. Still from the pit lane to fifth, he was out. Okay, C.
Max is an A as well.
C. B.
Wait, I forgot what I said, and then I just went one lower and went from A to a C. Okay, let's give him a B because of bad qualifying. It was his fault.
Okay.
Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel,
A.
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 Yeah.
Charles Leclerc.
A.
To be fair, Vettel didn't get pole. Charles.
A.
A. B. I don't think his performance was...
His
race pace wasn't that great.
His quali lap was fire.
Yeah, his race pace wasn't that good.
But he wasn't as quick as Vettel, was he?
No.
In the race.
And
couldn't
just
get past Bottas, but that is an issue for the track.
That's difficult. B. Lewis Hamilton. Mercedes. A.
A.
Yeah.
I was going to give him a B, but all right, let's go for an A.
A.
Yeah, I think it's hard to...
He kind of lucked into the win, but he did everything
he
that he was
into
meant
that position.
To do.
And he had a great qualifying as
and
well.
How
he did
put
in
P2.
Get in P2. Yeah. Sorry, I just remember being genuinely shocked.
Yeah, that last sector
that
they've
got there. Yeah, exactly. Valtteri
Bottas, C.
He's just
there.
He's so deflated at the moment, I think. It's the same as like last season, I think, around this time. Obviously not Russia, because he won last year, didn't he? But
it's a track that he's meant to be.
It's the year before.
Yeah, because last year, remember, they got him to swap it back.
Oh, yeah.
He was winning, and then he was the ultimate wingman.
Yeah, so let's go on to predictions for Russia, because that'll make it interesting. Tommy, we'll start with yours, because we just spoke about Bottas. What was your first one?
Bottas pole.
No.
Yeah, fifth.
And the other one?
Bernie Eccleston will be at the race with Putin. Neither of them were there.
0 points.
No, Putin was there earlier in the week.
But not with Bernie.
Not with...
Shut up. Bernie Ecclestone will be at the race with Putin. You are not getting half a point for that.
Why not?
Because you're just a terrible person. Jess.
Oh, wow.
I put Kvyat will torpedo someone into the Kvyat grandstand. No. That didn't happen.
That didn't happen, although he nearly torpedoed into turn two. No, it was the other way around. It was Gasly almost
torpedoed him.
And politics will be mentioned.
That was such a weak prediction.
And I don't think it came true either, did it?
Well, Ferrari politics was mentioned.
Oh,
half
God.
A point. That's definitely half a point.
No way. Are you even putting it in the document?
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Okay,
all right. My two were Russia will actually be exciting. Nope. Which I think at least is half a point.
No, there was
excitement.
I'd give you half a point because it wasn't
boring.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, if you're getting... you're not getting half a point.
Yeah, exactly.
If Jess gets half a point for politics, we mentioned, I'm getting half a point for Russia being exciting because of the controversy, the team orders, the strategy.
That's
you
not excitement.
Shush,
that's
at
half
least
a point.
It wasn't the French Grand Prix, was it?
No. Half a point. See, me and Jess both saying it.
Anonymous.
And Hasselmate Q3. Yeah, try and take that point this time there, Tommy. 1.0 points. I don't know why I put a point zero at the 1. End of it.
1.00.
Are you changing my prediction? Right, okay,
stop.
Cool.
All right,
and fans, Thiago tactics. Albon out-qualifies Verstappen.
Nope.
No. Banana cake pies. There will be no safety car or VSC.
There was both.
Gerardo, EH, Kvyat finishing in the points.
No.
Nope. No. Wow, 0 points for the fans this week. Predictions for Japan. I have gone for Charles Leclerc, 5 poles in a row.
And boy.
Yeah.
Shut up. And Verstappen will crash at some point during the race weekend. Pushing true. Too hard for Honda.
Yeah, yeah.
Jess?
Someone will try a ballsy move through Spoon curve.
That would be ballsy.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll have to define ballsy, but we'll go for it.
Someone will try, well, it's a move that people, most people
wouldn't
have gone
for. To be fair, any move through Spoon is ballsy, isn't it?
Exactly that. But we had it a little bit last year, right?
With Vettel.
Yes, Vettel spinning and everything.
So, or maybe people won't put any move through Spoon because they'll learn what Vettel did. Just because the Rugby World Cup's on, no doubt that's going to be
Rugby
woven into.
Will be, I love it. No doubt. So you're just there for the points.
I am. Because I've had such a shocker for Russia. I'm like, come on, Japan, give me some points.
There will be a race in Japan. Tommy, you're two.
Both Toro Rosso's in Q3.
I think that's
such a good shout. They were quick last year as
and
well.
And they got the new Honda power unit that they're going full
and?
Whack with. A fan will show up dressed as a Red Bull can, like full
Red Bull can.
Full can.
All right.
Are we going to count like if someone turns up with a Red Bull can on their hat?
No.
It has to be just
outfit. He is confident.
Yeah, they're going to be a tube.
Okay. Charlie Base 18 for the fans says Giovinazzi outqualifies Kimi again. Game-aholic for the win. No Red Bull on the podium. Wow, savage. And Elliot Walden 4, there will be multiple Land of the Rising Sun references by Crofty.
That's guaranteed.
That's a point already, isn't it, really?
Let's just give him the point.
Let's just give him the point. Well done, fans. had a shocker last time, fans, for the Russian Grand Prix. But Japan is next in 2 weeks' time?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's an early one, isn't it? That's a,
I'm at a wedding.
5, 6 a.m. start.
How dare my friends decide
get
to get married
on the Japanese Grand Prix?
The day of the Japanese Grand Prix.
That is
tell them
to reschedule, or at least watch the race during the ceremony or something. Yeah. That'd be good. Or maybe go down the aisle to the Formula One theme tune.
Yeah, well, actually, they're getting married at 3
a.m.
p.m.
Okay. That'd be fine.
Oh, you'll be fine then.
So
you'll
I be should
fine.
Be all right.
It starts
right?
at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., something like that, doesn't it?
You'll be asleep in the evening.
You'll just be really tired.
That's fine, though.
You'll fall asleep during the ceremony.
That's all right.
Cool.
They actually wrote, sorry, just quickly.
No worries.
They wrote on the invite, I hope the F1 calendar will allow you to come to our wedding.
And it has.
And it has.
Yeah. Well done, Suzuki.
They chose
a really early start. So I don't think you'll be up late for that one, though, will you? So,
no.
Right, that's it. We are done here for the Russian Grand Prix. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Let us know in the comment section below and just in general how we are, how you are.
How are you?
How's things?
How are you doing?
You well?
Are you well?
Let us know, obviously, any feedback and whatnot, and give us 5 stars if you're listening to us on any of the audio platforms that we currently offer.
Give us feedback. 5 stars.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No feedback, but then 5 stars because I think that's
fair.
We
delete any ratings.
Yes.
That aren't
yeah.
Five
yeah. Anything
we
below.
We can't.
We can't delete ratings. We would if we could. No, we wouldn't. But yeah, let us know comments and whatnot. And it's been a pleasure as always, Jess and Tommy and Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, me. And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for the Japanese Grand Prix. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Bye. Cool. Hang on.
Let's get out
1 minute
of here.
Pass.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.